Welcome to Adequate Yearly Progress, Episode 3. My name is Erin Sterling, and I'm the librarian at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. Every episode, I interview a different teacher and find out why they became a teacher, and what they like about it, and what they don't like about it. In this episode, I interview one of my dear friends who works with me at Eckstein Middle School, Hillary Logan, who has been a math teacher for 5 years. Hillary is thoughtful, passionate, and one of the most hilarious people I know. I'm waiting for the day when she starts her own podcast or vlog because I would be the first one on board. All right, let's go. Hi, Hillary. I'm glad you're on my show. For everyone listening, this is Hillary Logan. She is a math teacher at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. So, Hillary, could you just start by telling me about a little bit about yourself and why you became a teacher?
Okay. Well, I have been teaching for, I think this is my fifth year. Yep, fifth year. I didn't grow up in Seattle. I grew up in Puyallup, and I taught in Tacoma. I went to the University of Puget Sound. I became a teacher because I was working a bunch of dead-end jobs and didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I started subbing, and I really liked subbing. I really liked being around kids. Like, they know a lot more than you do when you're an adult, and so they, you know, have always some new discovery to tell you about, and that was really awesome. I was also working at a juvenile detention center at the time, and I met a lot of kids who didn't have any education.
Wow.
And that was really, like, a huge bummer. So I decided to become a teacher basically to help facilitate the teaching of critical thinking, I think. There's far too many adults who choose not to use or maybe lack critical thinking skills. And so I think that education's really important in ending the perpetuation of ignorance in adults.
Sounds about right. So I guess we'll start with kind of the positive. So what's been really rewarding about teaching?
When you see someone learn something for the first time and they finally get it, that's really awesome. Kids are really fun. They're a lot more, I'm trying to think of the word, I can't think of it in my head, resilient than adults.
Mm-hmm.
They give you the benefit of the doubt more. They're more positive. They have less, have less of a critical view of the world, and so they're a lot more fun. They I feel like have a lot of joy. They have a lot of discovery. They ask a lot of questions. They don't have a filter, and so just being around them is really awesome. And so going to work every day, you like learning something new, and you know, like being there when kids discover just parts of life that they didn't know is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They're always like, you know, dealing with new technology or have figured out something new about the world, and they want to tell you about it. There's a lot less drama that matters. I mean, there's definitely drama in middle school, but like none of it's like, you know, you like listen to NPR all day and be like, this is the hugest bummer in the whole world. And then you see middle school drama and you're like, it's not that bad. Life is not that terrible. So there's that. I think you probably are the same way. I'm a huge like academia nerd. And so just like teaching kids that what's something that's really important to you, like math, for me is like just like mind blowing. And so when they're like, oh yeah, this is mind blowing, you have a captive audience for your own interests. And so that's kind of cool. They think of you as an expert, so they always like want to know everything about your life and like how you learn something. And so you can literally find something cool, I don't know, in the newspaper or on your, I guess if you read your phone, and then show them, and they're like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And so there's a lot of really good feedback there. I think teaching also, like I'm realizing now, is one of those few professions that really like, hold them. Teachers and education, I think, holds itself to a really high standard.
Yeah.
So there's a professionalism in like respecting academia, respecting critical thinking, respecting peer-reviewed research, but also stuff like respecting work-life balance. And I know people say teachers don't have that, but like the amount of time off teachers have is the healthy amount of time off people should have. So when you see all these overworked people in the summer, it's nice to like have this time of reflection and like relaxation before it comes and like starts all over again. So I think like that's really good. Having a bunch of coworkers that all have the same vision as you do of like academia and the world and like knowledge is power and stuff is really good. And it's not a corporation.
Yeah.
Like those are off the top of my head some like really good stuff about education, but
yeah. What was an early challenge for you? We'll kind of get into maybe what are the frustrating things now, but when you first started teaching, or maybe when you first start every year even.
Well, so I guess when I first started teaching, I had a really good experience as a student.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in not an affluent area, but like a upper middle class area. So the schools tended to have like supplies, and the kids generally were there to learn, and they came to school, like my peers and myself, we came to school like having the resources we needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I tended to do pretty well in school, and I really liked it, and I had a good experience. My first experience teaching was in a failing school in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. In a really high poverty neighborhood. So the eye-opening turnaround of like kids coming to school and I'm like, why don't you care? Why mm-hmm. don't you want to learn? Why are you like not interested in this thing? Like realizing that they might, as like 11-year-olds, have different priorities than school was mind-baffling. And like the fact that they weren't doing it to piss me off as like the authority, they yeah. were doing it because like they literally were trying to survive. That was really sad. And so like trying to, first of all, like put yourself in the frame of mind of a child who's maybe like running drugs at night, or like trying to, you know, make money to feed their family, and or maybe hasn't eaten all weekend. And, like, yeah. why would they ever care about math? like trying to like sit with that and figure out like, wow, the world is terrible. And why do we let these kids live like this? And then also like trying to then make something as fundamentally difficult for children in the transition of puberty, like trying to make math important for them.
Mm-hmm.
That was really hard. So I think working in a school district where everything's like a huge challenge with like poverty and then immigration and transient kids, that's a big challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine that not being a challenge. Was there anything that surprised you about teaching?
I guess
that was kind of a surprise, but
yeah, I think so. When you substitute teach, which is what I did,
right? Right.
And when you are little, or not little.
And did you substitute? You substitute and then went and got your master's, or did you?
So
you got your master's and then substitute?
In 2008, before like the economic crash, teaching was like, a lot of people didn't have, like right now a lot of people like struggle to get jobs. There's like less teaching jobs than there are teachers. But in 2008 it was kind of opposite. So there were, in the rural districts where I grew up, there mm-hmm. was like a shortage of subs. So if you had bachelor's degree, you could just sign up and be a sub.
Gotcha. Okay.
And so I did that and I thought, oh, this is so awesome. I really loved it. And then I went back to school.
Okay.
I actually dropped out of a program to be a school counselor. I was right. halfway through it, and then so I switched.
So you're saying, like something that surprised you because you had already subbed.
Oh, people always tell you, you like when you're not a teacher yet, and they always say, "Oh, it's the politics that will kill you,"
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
it's the like ridiculousness of the bureaucracy, and I'm like, oh no, it can't be that way because the children are so wonderful. And when you're alone in a room with a bunch of kids, like you can just, you know, watch like, I don't know, the Curiosity Landing, and everyone's having a great time and everyone's learning. But then uh-huh. they're right. It surprises me how every person in America goes through a compulsory education system, and maybe not as clearly as I do, sees the benefit of that,
mm-hmm.
and then turns around and doesn't exercise their vote in trying to protect public schools. It's the reason that mm-hmm. we are different from the rest of the world. It's the reason why we have a fairly highly educated populace. I mean, everyone that's an adult is pretty much illiterate, at least like 95%.
Right.
And so it surprises me that people kind of look and turn their head when we are continuously cutting funding for education, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or like trying to bust unions. As a citizen of a community and a future parent, who wouldn't want high quality education? Even if you weren't a parent, why wouldn't you want the people in your community to grow up educated? Because if they don't, you're going to end up spending more on them,
mm-hmm.
with taxpayer dollars anyway, trying to help them survive adulthood without any sort of ability to contribute to society. I don't know. So that's like, it really like, it blows my mind every single year how, you know, we continue to cut education and there's all this movement of Common Core and like around the country, like let's just do charter schools. And, you know, those have been like proven to be either no different or ineffective. And I'm not surprised that everyone's not outraged. That's right. A huge thing for me.
Yeah. Do you think it partly has to do with the experience of going to school yourself and what teachers actually do is different in their minds?
Well, I feel like what I've realized is my experience for school was really positive and not everyone's was. A lot of people actually had a pretty negative experience and don't feel like they got out of it what I did. Mm-hmm. And then there's another thing where, you know, people have really busy lives and voting. I mean, today's the primary for Seattle.
Yeah.
People don't pay attention unless it's like going to detrimentally change their lives.
Right, right.
And then people, you know, sometimes just think, if there's so much research backing it up and everyone says it on TV, then it must be true.
Mm-hmm. So kind of aside from the like bureaucracy that you've mentioned a little bit or the kind of that the general public isn't supporting, are there other things that have been frustrating about becoming a teacher or being a teacher, teaching?
I think that just like any job, like working with people that maybe you wouldn't necessarily get along with or be friends with is hard. You think as a teacher going into it that you're going to have, you know, like you think, oh, there must be curriculum and textbooks. Uh-huh. And there must be a plan. But oftentimes there's not a plan. And oftentimes they're like, here's a textbook. Here, I remember the first day when I was in Seattle and I clearly stated in my interview, I need someone to work with. I need help with this. I've only taught math for 1 year. Uh-huh. I haven't taught this level of math. And I'm going to need like a team. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're going to have like collaboration, time. And no, they handed me the textbook and like 6 manuals about the textbook and the curriculum guide. And they're like, have fun. And it's like up to you to take that information and distill it down into something that's it's like teachable or even like interesting.
Yeah.
And you're lucky if you have teachers to collaborate with, but maybe they're not in your grade level. Maybe they completely aren't engaged in collaboration. It's just like so much more work than you'd ever think. So you really have to build in the strategies to make something out of nothing. It feels, I don't want to say fraudulent because that's not definitely not true, but like it feels like, oh, I'm just gonna make this up and I'm gonna do it and I hope it works. And I don't think people who aren't teachers realize that like sometimes the whatever's being taught in class is like to the best of your knowledge. I mean, depends on the research you put into it. I hope no parents are listening.
So what did you or what do you do then when you're just given the curriculum and asked to teach the next day? Like what are strategies that you use?
Well, one, it would be to teach the same thing over and over again because then you start to get good at it. When in student teaching they tell you, you know, you need to like plan out everything and you need to follow a lesson plan. I don't do that, but I do on sticky notes, which is the most effective for me, kind of plan the week. Uh-huh. The week before. So like maybe on Thursday, I'll be like, okay, well, this is what I'm doing 5 days out. And I don't write down a plan. I just kind of write down the keywords of like what I need to cover.
Yeah.
I've gotten way better at it since I've repeated the same subject. But you think you're going to teach like for math. I don't know about other subjects, but like, I don't know. Like there's a format for classes like, you know, maybe entry task, notes, and then like practice and then exit task.
Mm-hmm.
You do this all the time and you think, oh, you're getting, and they say this is a really highly effective teaching strategy.
Right, right.
But what they don't say is it's boring. And yes, it's good to build stamina because kids will be doing this for a lot longer than they're in your class, but you have to sort of switch it up. So I use the internet and YouTube and, you know, just like other teachers, examples to just build in activities when it's getting stagnant. So I have this file cabinet where I keep everything and I almost never look in it because I, rather than go back to like the ideas that I've like made a file of, I usually Google like, how would you teach this? And then I find 10 innovative ways to do it or I find teacher websites and then I just try out a new activity or try out a new game. But it's very much, I planned it 2 days before.
Right.
It's never like, they always talk about those teachers who spend the entire summer planning out day to day to day, and mm-hmm. they have the calendars, and I don't think I could tell you what I'm teaching in 2 weeks because I have to see where the students are,
right.
see where the curriculum is, see like what assemblies are going to cancel class, and then it has to be relevant to the kids. Like if it's, you know, a sports season, maybe make it about football,
right.
or maybe make it about something that's going on in the news, because teaching is like, someone told me the best quote once, teaching is like being a waiter or waitress at a restaurant, but before you take their order, you have to convince them that they're hungry.
That's amazing. I've heard that before.
Not only do you have to teach these kids something that they need to know, but you have to also convince them that it's worth paying attention to.
Right.
So it's sort of like a circus act every day, I would say.
But what have been some moments where either things you planned or things you didn't plan worked out really well and it made you feel good about being a teacher?
I am very fortunate to have worked with some advanced groups of kids, and I would say that in a couple of my classes, they've been able to basically run themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's really rewarding, but I would never put that on myself. More like they have this really strong motivation to do well in my class, and if they don't do well, they can always get moved back.
But you must have set up some ways that they can run it, right?
Well, I try and have a routine.
For those classes.
Yeah. And they... So like one example, which could have gone terrible, but didn't. I was very surprised. I had... Myself and my teaching partner from my PLC, we had our students, they had like, it was chapter 7 out of, and we did every chapter up until 7. So they knew the routine. So they were learning a content area. I think that one was functions. And then mm-hmm. they would take a formative assessment, which is, you know, just to like see what they know. And then they would take a summative assessment at the end. Well, I had them, we all had, we split them into groups and gave them each two standards, and there was probably 10 standards in this chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And every kid, so there were groups of three, mm-hmm. and they all had two standards, and they were supposed to, they had like three standards for the whole chapter. So I split them into groups of three, and there was probably like six groups, maybe seven groups. Anyway, they had to write their own assessment. So they had to write an assessment for the chapter, thinking like, what would I do? So they were writing it like they thought I would do it.
Yep.
But then they had to write a rubric.
Uh-huh.
And then they, so first period and sixth period did this. And then I gave first period the sixth period's test and vice versa.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the kids took the test and then they got them back and they had to grade them.
Uh-huh.
But they actually did really well and it turned out amazing. They were really intentional with their answers. They were really, or their questions, they were really intentional about how they built the test so that like they could check for learning, and the rubrics were really good. And if they weren't that good, the class who had taken the test gave them feedback.
Oh, cool.
And they like learned a lot. And I remember asking them if they've ever done this before. And they're like, oh no, teachers don't trust us to do this enough. And I was like thinking at the time, and that was a time where I was like really struggling to just kind of hand it over to them. If you give them that, if you raise the bar to really high, they will most likely meet it.
Right.
And they ended up learning so much from that experience, like, you know, what it would take to show that you know something, like meeting versus exceeding. So they started after that test to be able to show me their thinking in a way where I would understand it, because they knew how important it was for the grader. So I thought that was like a really good experience for them.
Oh, that's cool. What advice you have for people who are either thinking about being teachers or maybe are already currently in a program or are wanting to change careers? Basically people who are interested in the field but aren't there yet.
You're going to get vilified. Mm. So if that's too hard for you, and it's hard for me. So I feel like if that's too hard for you, you're going to constantly think, did I make the right choice for your career? So you have to get over that.
Yeah. Do you think the vilification comes from mostly outside or like within?
Well, actually both. But like being a teacher, you constantly get told like, oh, your job's not that hard. Mm. You get like 3 months off. You work till 3. You should why do you even go on strike? You're a terrible person.
Okay.
That kind of stuff. Like, you get it from the community and you even get it from your family. So that's kind of difficult. It's a lot of work initially. I would say to someone who's student teaching right now, hang in there. After year one, you are like, it's a different ballgame. You've learned so much more, but you're also not so stressed out. So that's like really important. If you are a teacher or going to become a teacher, make sure that you maintain your work-life balance. Make sure you have people that aren't teachers, or even if they are teachers, that are like outside of your teaching life, so that you can like maintain your sanity. I would say if you give 100% or 200%, like a lot of teachers try and like, you know, go the extra mile and work 10 hours a day. It makes no difference. There's always going to be someone who like does less work than you, and your job's still going to get done. So do not break your back trying.
Okay.
It's not worth your own sanity and your own health.
Yeah.
But yeah, do it. It's really rewarding in ways you wouldn't expect.
And then I guess my last sort of question, I mean, we could talk for hours and hours, but so why are you still teaching?
Do you want the real answer or the...
I want the real answer. Yeah.
So one of the reasons I went into teaching that I didn't mention before is that I had a bachelor's degree in sociology and I couldn't find a job. And so I went to school to be a school counselor. And at the time I was working in juvenile detentions and it was so depressing. And I didn't think I could do it because school counselors just deal with crisis. So I quit. Moved back in with my parents, and I had massive student loan debt for undergrad. So I was like paying my student loan payments and working a minimum wage job, and it was terrible. And I was like 25, and by 25, you want to kind of have your stuff together. So I went back to school and actually dropped $50,000 on a private program because I couldn't pay my student loans off, and now I have significantly more debt. Yeah. And if I didn't teach, I wouldn't be able to pay it off, but because of the public service forgiveness for 10 years, if you teach for 10 years, they will forgive your debt. I don't have another way out of that. I will be, I would have to go bankrupt to pay off my student loans, but I still think it's worth it. I think it's worth the upward mobility somewhat, to go to college. So I'm sort of definitely in it for 6 more years to pay the loans off, and then I might consider a different career. But I really do think that I'm a person who gets really easily frustrated with like world events and like national news, and you can't really change the world. You can't at one person. It's really hard to. You could, you know, die trying, but teaching, you are able to influence 150 kids a year, and you don't have to, you know, change their perspective about everything, but if you can instill the importance of like critical thinking and evidence and you know, questioning everything that you hear,
right
that I have to believe every day is going to result in an informed populace. At least maybe not all of them, but some of them will be like, you know, you can't believe everything you read. And we have this planet that's like getting really hot, and you know, there's like so much, you know, so many things that could go wrong, and these kids are going to be the people making all the decisions. And so I would like it if when they were faced with a huge decision, they had some sort of rubric in their head for how they could go about discerning whether or not it was the right decision. And I'm hoping that, you know, if we all push that in their heads for like 12 years, that some of it will stick.
We'll seep through.
And I think that's important. You know, we have to teach them so they don't grow up stupid. Because nobody wants that.
Awesome. Well, I think that's the questions that I have for you. So I really appreciate you being on my show. And we will talk again soon.
All right.
Bye. That's the end of my show. Thanks for listening. You can find future episodes on adequateyearlyprogress.com, iTunes, and hopefully soon the Microsoft Podcast app. Thanks to the band Inspira's song Follow the Waves for the upbeat music you are dancing to right now. Thanks to freesound.org for the Creative Commons license for user SBYANDIJI's alarm bell sound, user Totia's VIA sound, and user Mental Sanity Off for the background chatter sound. Thanks to all of you for listening, and talk to you next on October 19th.